So, you want to be a contractor. Ever wonder what it takes to become a contractor? The journey they go on to get where they are now, or the crazy things they see and hear on the job site. Well, you're in the right spot. Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor, the podcast. Join your host, Mike Fisher, as he talks to owners of construction companies from all over about how they got started, how they run their business, and some of the craziest stories they've experienced on their job sites. And now, your host, Mike Fisher.
Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor. This is episode number 34. My name is Mike Fisher, and my co-host over there,
Maricela Arechiga with New Generation Improvements. I am still here. Mike has not fired me. Thank you.
You got to get rid of that line. It's just here. It's just who you are now. There's no more trial period. This is
like a booger, sick.
Yeah. Episode number, I think, 5 with Maricela on board. So we're rolling along and it's doing great.
We're getting into its stride, Mike.
That's beautiful. I love it. So our guest today, Nick Yahudine from Advanced Builders and Contractors, the owner over there. How you doing, Nick?
Doing well. And you?
Good. Thank you. And you guys are out of LA, right?
Correct.
Perfect. Well, before we kind of get into this, let's hear a little bit about you. What's your story? How did you get into this industry, and what were those events that led you to where you are now? And we might stop in between. So just know that Maricela likes to interject and dive deeper.
Like, hold up. So, wait. What did you say? Stop. So please don't be offended by my interjection.
No worries. So I got into the business because before this, I actually used to buy and sell cars. So one of these times, this body shop guy calls me, tells me, listen, this guy needs a loan on a car. Give him a loan and sell him a car at the same time. So I did that. The guy ended up being my friend, Sam. And then he kept bugging me, telling me, listen, I'm really good at construction, but I can't do any paperwork. Why don't you do the paperwork and do construction and we can work together? And I kept pushing him off numerous times. And eventually he just said, listen, I just need help with this one deal. Just write a contract for me, do the paperwork, and then, just help me along as a friend. But I told him fine. And then again, he kept pushing me to do work, and I told him no. Yeah, so eventually he just got too annoying, and I told him, okay, fine, let's just do it. You know, I have no idea what construction is, but fine, let me just help you, be able to get this deal. So I ended up doing the paperwork for Aaron, and then he kept pushing me, so I ended up helping him with contracts. And then little by little, I ended up learning construction through him. He was actually in the business for about, 15, 20 years prior to me. So when I got into the business, I learned a lot from him as far as the actual technical construction side, because he actually used to be able to work in the field. So I didn't have any experience. So I learned field experience. I learned office experience, set up the whole S-Corp company, phone number, DBA, website, et cetera.
He had been operating for 15 years without those things. And so you came on to almost legitimize the business.
Yeah, correct. He was like a contractor / handyman working, off of his truck. And he really wanted to improve and grow, especially because his family was growing. He wanted to know more steady income. So that's how I was able to give him value. And then by me working with him, I already had an office set up for cars. So when I saw that construction was profitable, I stopped doing cars and I put the real estate aside and I started doing construction full time.
So why did he come to you? I'm curious. What was there any sort of history or schooling or knowledge base or something that led him to you to ask for that help originally?
I think he was impressed because I was really honest with him, with the whole car deal. And he was also, I think, very impressed because I was very organized and everything that I used to do with him as far as paperwork was, legit and everything was done properly. So I think he was drawn to that because that's what he needed. He needed someone to organize pretty much his work career. And he didn't have that. And I don't think he could get that from a secretary or an assistant.
So he had no idea of your background or what your what your history was or schooling or anything along those lines. He just saw how organized you were and thought, I need that in my life. And
pretty much
bug the crap out of you until you joined on.
Pretty much.
This is the guy. How long ago was that, Nick, that you joined forces with your partner?
This is going back now, probably 18 years ago.
And are you guys still in business together?
Yeah, I was going to ask, is that the same company or have you gotten separate ways since then?
Still the same company. He actually ended up retiring and moving away. So I think about 4 or 5 years ago, I ended up doing it on my own. I bought him out and just been doing it on my own ever since.
What's your specialty?
You didn't know, we're literally on the same exact page. That's exactly what I was going to ask.
It's like we were meant to be, Mike.
What were you guys doing back then and what are you doing now? And what was that transition period like, if it's any different?
So back then, because we wanted to grow, we would do anything from a driveway to a small bathroom, to a kitchen, to literally anything that would make money. Nowadays, I try to get the bigger scopes of work, like whether it's hillside, whether it's a new construction, whether it's a whole home remodel, dealing with like historic properties, anything really that is something that's big that the average contractor is not even the skill to do or doesn't want to do because, this is what the quick way. I end up going after 3 to 5 properties a year. And what I do with those is, I don't have a salesperson or an assistant. I try to handle everything myself. I have very talented people over the past 18 years, whether it's an electrician, plumber, or a drywall guy, but I do 3 to 5 deals within the LA area, and I give it my all, and I specialize in the bigger projects. So whether it's one that we're going to tear down and build from scratch, or whether it's a home that we're going to completely remodel from top to bottom, I've done 100-year-old homes, I've done 10-year-old homes.
Nick, do you self-perform? Like, do you have your own in-house guys? Or are you mostly, you sub out, you find the right electrician for the project, you find the right tradesman for each category? How are you set up?
I pretty much sub everything out. Because if I was going to do it in-house, it would probably take me a little bit longer. Although it would be cheaper for me to have my own guys to do everything, I generally try to structure the deal where it's all subbed out. This way I have an electrician who is doing electrical every single day. Plumber is doing plumbing every single day. Drywall guy is doing drywall every single day. So
tell us about the pros and cons about that. Because in the GC world, when you are a general contractor, license B, and you can either have your own in-house guys that are performing the scopes of work, or like you can have your subcontractors. If somebody's thinking about setting up their business, why should they set it up in a way that you've set it up, Nick? And what are some of the cons to that?
So let's do the pros first. The pros are that person specializes in one special work. They're either an electrician, plumber, drywall, stucco, foundation framing. So they perform that day in and day out. They don't do anything else. For example, if I give my painter an electrical panel, he has no idea what that is. So for me, that's very, very important. Why? Because I pass all my inspections the first time around. I never have to sit there and babysit them and show them something that they have no idea what that is. So if I have a complete project and I tell my electrician, listen, the entire property needs to be rewired, needs to be upgraded with a panel. I need 100 recess lights. Here's the floor plan, go. So in that aspect, it's very, very good. The other pros are also, time is money. I don't have to sit there and manage that company now. That company has an owner or a manager or supervisor who's going to sit there now and manage all of their workers.
Yeah.
So for me, that works. And I end up giving my clients a high-end project where they're happy with it. We don't have to sit there and redo the work 2 or 3 or 4 times. Because to me, one thing I learned from my partner is that cheap is expensive. If I do it the cheap way around the first time, I'm going to have to pay
word up
2, 3, 4 times, 5 times sometimes to redo it. So rather than doing that, I'd rather just give it to a specialist who does this on a day in, a day out basis. And he's an expert and it's finished and done with.
Okay. So what are the cons?
Well, on that, real quick, before we get to the cons, how do you control that though, right? Because ultimately these guys are controlled by another, like you said, another owner and another mm-hmm. time schedule and another mm-hmm. quality of work, right? Mm-hmm. And you can hire them and you can look at what they've done, but at the end of the day, it's somebody else controlling their quality of work. And then sure, like you said, you can come in and behind them and say, hey, this isn't good enough for what I've asked you to do, you know, redo it or whatever. But what is that process like in vetting these guys out and managing them and making sure that they are performing to a quality of standard that reflects on your name and your business?
Mm-hmm. Good question. So number one, obviously, the types of jobs that we do are always going to be supervised and inspected by the city. So I have that as an assurance. Number two, I'm not just letting them run wild and do whatever they want. At the end of the day, whether it's on a daily basis or a weekly basis, I'm there to make sure that they are doing what they're supposed to be doing.
So you're physically on property a lot of the times.
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have a management team that also supports you, Nick, or are you the guy?
No, I do that myself. And the reason I do that is because I've had in the past salespeople, and I've had project managers, and I've had assistants. You just don't get the same quality that you're there yourself, visually looking at it, inspecting it, making sure that everything's done correctly and it's ready for the next step. So one reason why I like doing it is because, you know, I'm able to catch everything myself. I can have a direct communication with their supervisor or owner.
Yeah.
I tell them, listen, X, Y, and Z is not correct. So fix it before we either end up in hot water with their client or before we're ready for inspection and, you know, all goes to hell.
I think one of the things that is key in that, Nick, is the number of projects that you said you're doing a year, because the scalability of that is pretty limiting, right? You can only manage the amount of projects you can be at a certain time. And there's certainly so much value in Nick being there. He's representing the business. He's representing the client because you are the advocate for your client. You know what your client wants.
Correct.
But you can't manage 10 projects at the same time in the same quarter, right?
Correct. So what happens is this. If I end up getting into a time of the year where it's going to be 10 projects that I have to manage, I can always pull help in and assistance from people I've worked with in the past.
But I'd
rather not go that route. I'd rather do $3, $5 million deals a year rather than doing 20, $50,000 kitchens throughout the year.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
So the scalability is in the size of the job, not necessarily the number of jobs then, right? So you're just a lot more selective about the type of project and the size of the project versus just, like you said, taking a bunch of little jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you gotta remember, after 18 years of experience, I'm very selective about who I work with. You know, thank God. I'm doing well and I don't have to sit there and, you know, do every small little project that comes my way. And even when I do end up meeting with a higher-end client that has $2-3 million job, I can be selective and tell them, listen, because of these reasons, either your project or because of your attitude or because we just don't mesh as far as me and you clicking, you know, it's not going to be a good fit. And I told them very nicely, you know, I don't think I'm the right fit for you. And I just leave it that way.
Yeah.
We're gonna get all the way into client relations because I love sitting there. But
she loves that. But let's get back to the cons.
Let's get to the cons. So that, absolutely agree with you, Nick, that subcontractors, you have a specialty, your electrician's coming in, he's banging it out. He's also giving you a price that he wants to honor. So for his profitability's sake, he's going to come in and do it once and then pass inspection and he's done. But
correct.
Talk to us about the cons in running your business that way. What are some of the challenges you've experienced?
The challenges is going to be number one, you're not always going to get them when you want them there, meaning that he doesn't only work for me. He works with a bunch of other job contractors or a bunch of different homeowners. So you don't always get the possibility to have him there Monday morning at 9 a.m. It may be Monday afternoon, or maybe the next day. So that's con one. Con two, obviously, because it's not an in-house guy, it's going to cost you more. But for me, I still prefer to do it the way I'm doing it because quality for me is extremely, extremely important. And if I was going to have my own guys, there would be no way I'd be able to employ 100 people throughout the year. I pay all of the wages and workman's comp and insurance and all the other taxes that I have
insurances,
to pay.
Insurances, man. Insurances. Or,
easy. Easy.
So because of those reasons, I run it this way, and it's ended up working for me.
How do you manage the amount of subcontractors? Do you use the same guys over and over, or are you having to keep things fresh so that that relationship is always new?
So I would love to use my guys over and over again. And I do. I have, you know, for example, my tile guy or my plumber has been there from, I don't know, 17, 18 years ago.
Amazing.
So I think with any profession, you know, whatever you put out, you're going to get back. So I try to respect and give as much authority to them as possible and treat them well and give them bonuses and, you know, take them out for lunch. And that way, when you need him there Monday morning, he's there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I try to use them as much as possible. It's to my benefit because again, you don't have to sit there and babysit them and you already know the quality of work. Yeah. Every once in a while, their pricing is out of whack because they're busy and, you know, for them to come to you, they're going to charge you a premium. So I have to then at that point, look for a new subcontractor and say, listen, Mr. XYZ is giving me $5,000 for the job. You're giving me $7,000 for the job. And even though I know I've known you for 18 years, you know, you're still at $7,000. So try to either meet me in the middle and try to work with me or tell me what's going on so we can still continue that relationship.
Yeah.
Communication, yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest thing with a lot of, I mean, whether you have employees or obviously with your clients or in your case, your subcontractors, right? Keeping that line of communication open is what's going to maintain those relationships.
Yeah. And I think relationships, Mike, like for me and what we do, it's really about establishing and pouring into the subcontractors that you get to partner with. They are extensions of my business.
Absolutely.
The homeowner doesn't know, you know, how many different subs are coming in or their company names unless they're wearing it on their shirts.
Well, they hopefully, know, they right? Know me.
Yeah.
Hopefully they don't.
Right. They know me and they're going to call me. And even during the job and after into a warranty, they're not calling my electrician. They're calling New Generation. They're calling Maricela saying this, you know, this is what's going on. So having that rapport and that relationship is really important with your subcontractors.
Absolutely.
Agreed. What do you love about what you do? You were in the car industry for so many years. Tell me what you love about, you know, renovations, because it sounds like, if I understand it correctly, you're doing more high-end, large-scale renovations, or is it ground up as well?
Both. So what I love is taking crappy old, hasn't been touched in 100 years, and has 4 different types of wiring, and bringing it into the future and giving that client that wow factor and saying, I can't believe this is my home. Mm-hmm. And I love taking raw piece of dirt land and building 5,000 or 7,000 square foot property that somebody's going to come and be like amazed that I can't believe a year ago this was just dirt and land. And now today it's a $8 million hole. So I love doing that for clients and I love making people happy. And it's just a passion of mine now.
So tell us how you've gone about almost 20 years of being in business. How have you been able to position yourself? What marketing are you doing so that you're able to find the right clients, those 3 to 5, 7 clients?
That's got to be stressful, right? I mean, if you're planning to only do a few projects a year, if you don't have them scheduled, then you miss a third of your year, right? I mean, or you could in theory. So whereas somebody who's doing, you know, hundreds of projects a year doesn't really miss out if they've, you know, missed, you know, 5 or 6, if they miss their mark by 5, 6, 8 projects.
Correct. So I think being in business, number one, people know where you already know your brand, know your company.
Mm-hmm.
And once they look you up and see pictures and videos and they look at, I don't know, Yelp and Google and Edgy's List, they feel more comfortable with you. I think most of my clients, I am very transparent. Everything that we do, we try to either post on social media or post on our website. So by the time the client gets on the phone and calls me on my cell phone, they already know who I am, what I look like, what I've done, what jobs I've done in the past, and where we're located. So it makes them very, very comfortable. So when you actually meet them for the first time at their home, they already know a good amount about you and what you look like and, you know, what you represent. And I think referrals obviously play a huge factor over any lead generation that you could do, whether it's SEO or whether it's Angie's List or whether it's another third party. When somebody actually sits there and tells their colleague or their friend, look, I've used Nick in the past, he rebuilt my entire property, looks beautiful, it's, you know, 4 or 5 years later and I still don't have any problems with it. I think that makes a huge impact for that homeowner to contact you rather than them shooting a dart, darts in the dark and trying to find the contractor out of some other directory.
Do you do anything to incentivize that word of mouth? Like, because I think for any good contractor out there, word of mouth is the number one source. But that's also, you never know when that will come or if that will happen. Do you do anything? Because we're looking for, you know, 5 projects a year. Do you do anything to encourage that word of mouth? Or is it just, has it just come always?
Yes and no. I mean, if I remember, I call them on their birthdays or send them a text. When I finish the project, I always, if it's a bigger project, I leave them with like a basket of flowers. Or if it's like a bathroom remodel, you know, I buy them robes that, that they can, with their name stitched on it, that they can use. So yeah, and again, working in the same area, every once in a while, you know, they see you going by again. So you knock on the door, say hello. So I think I have a very tight, close relationship with my clients.
That's great.
And I think because, again, you do such a good job for them, you're always going to be someone that they memorize and they're always going to know. I mean, I have clients who, it's been like 3 or 4 years now, and they still call me and text me and tell me, I have a birthday coming up or I have a party, you know, why don't you come over? Or I don't know, I have a question regarding this appliance, you know, what should I do? Who should I contact? So
yeah,
I think it's just, honestly, for me, I think it's the more good you put out, the more good is going to come back to you.
For sure.
Whether it's the guy who's picking up the trash for you or whether it's a client who spends $2 or $3 million with you, if you give someone respect and you put
that's
good
what
out
I was
there.
Say. Respect and humanization, always, right? Like just humanize the process, right? Understand that there are people, feelings, individuals involved in that process. And I think it might be tough because some people think, well, Nick's only doing 3 or 5 projects a year, right? It's easy for him to do some of those things and keep in touch with those people and do it. But if you manage it correctly, and I think a few episodes ago, we talked about the power of a CRM and maintaining, you know, history and information on your clients, but whether it's past or future or current, you can set up a lot of those things and do them, you know, kind of in an automated way. But I mean, for you, it's easy to do, you know, on a one-to-one basis, just because the few clients you've had, but it makes that whole process, like I said, it humanizes it, right? Like
very personal.
They understand you as a human. There's personal, there's feelings involved and they respect that. And then I think that's probably, you don't even have to ask for a referral at that point, right? I mean, in most cases they're understanding you as a human. They know who you are personally. You're doing things for them, recognizing different occasions, events, whatever. It probably just comes pretty natural.
So I love technology and I love everything that it's done for us. And now that we've gone through COVID and everything, you know, with Zoom and text and phone calls and I love that. But I think because of that, we've lost that person face-to-face connection.
100%.
Absolutely.
And I think every once in a while, you know, it's important to get on the phone with your client and tell them, and I think you misunderstood my text. Actually, just before now, just before I got on this call, my client called me, told me, listen, there's a delivery guy. There's no one at the job. What do we do? And I told him, listen, give them the gate code. She's like, I don't want to give the gate code out. I told him, listen, give them the gate code. Let them deliver what they need to deliver. We'll change the gate code in the afternoon. It's not a big deal. So I think, you know, when you have that good relationship with the client and you have that good energy, it's only going to continue. And then I think the biggest problem with contractors that I hear is that, you know, something goes wrong and rather than get up and try to face it head on, they try to hide behind email or text or voicemail and they don't, you know, deal with it. I think people would much rather, you know, say, listen, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. It's not going to happen again. Let it go. Let's continue with the project. Let's continue going forward rather than try to hide behind a text and say, you know, I don't know what happened. You know, it wasn't me, blah, blah, blah.
Or push the brand. Yeah.
Exactly.
Nick, how long is your sales process? If someone calls you today and they check all the boxes for how you qualify your clients, we'll get into what that looks like. But what's your sales process like from start to before, from your pre-con? Like, I talked to you today. When do projects start? What's that sales process look like?
So most of the clients who contact me need a set of plans. I need those set of plans to be approved by the city before we can build, because they're bigger projects. They're not just, can't just pull a fur lid for a kitchen and bathroom.
Yeah.
Or the counter. So most of my clients don't have permits yet. They're at a place where they've either started with an architect and engineer, or they're at the very end of that stage. They'll contact me and tell me, listen, my architect recommended you, or this homeowner recommended you. I want to start the process, and before I'm ready to pull the permits, I want to talk to you and see about timing and price and quality, etc. So that's my number one with any client who contacts me. Do you have plans, and are they permitted? If they have plans and they're permitted, then within the week, I'll go and meet them. And within 1, 2, 3 hour of conversation, you can already get a feel of how the client is going to be. This is going to be a hard client. You're going to have to deal with the lender who's going to have to send a third-party inspector. You'll get the gist of what this
how challenging or difficult. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The
logistics of this project, how it's going to be. And then once you know that, and then you have a face-to-face relationship with the client, then you can say, listen, my profit margin is going to be at X amount. So therefore for me to be able to take this project on and do 3 or 4 or 7 projects throughout the year, I have to price this at this range to be able to make it profitable and make it worth my while.
You're having that conversation at what point? At the very beginning, like when you first meet?
If it's something I can present to them at the first meeting, I will. If not, within the second or third meeting, for sure, I'll give them some sort of a rough ballpark figure. If they tell me that rough ballpark figure looks good, then we'll move forward and I'll put it into a set of contracts for them to review.
The itemized bid. So I really appreciate that that's where you're going. So it's meeting them and then giving them at least a framework of, look, I think that this project is going to be $1 million, so that you can also understand if you're speaking the same language, right? Because then it doesn't make sense for Nick to spend X amount of time giving an itemized bid if they were expecting Nick to charge $500,000. We're not even speaking the same language.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I hate is wasting my own time and wasting somebody else's time. So I'm very direct and I'm very to the point. And I'll tell them right out front, listen, for me to do this project as a general contractor in this market with the quality that you're asking, it's going to cost X amount. If you don't, we don't see eye to eye, I recommend you stop the conversation today and you find someone else who can help you with what you're looking for, because I'm not able to do it. And as a general contractor in the LA market, after I pay all my expenses, depending on the scope of work, most of my profit margins is going to be 10, 15, if I'm lucky, 20%. But even on a $1 million project, I'm not taking home $700,000. I still a lot of
insurances.
I have all my overhead and all of these subcontractors to pay. So, it just has to make financial sense for me and the client.
How do you manage it if a homeowner is suggesting or requires you to put that in an itemized bid for it to qualify? All right, Nick, you said this is going to be $1 million. I need you to itemize that. I need to know what your demo is going to cost, electrical is going to cost. I need to see that.
So I don't do that, actually. I don't break it down by demo, electrical, plumbing. I give them one bulk number for the entire project, and I itemize every aspect of the project that I'm going to do. So if we're going to build a new house, I tell them from the time we do demo to the time I do your paint and completion, and I give you your keys back, it's going to cost you X amount. If you ask me for extra work, we'll agree to it in writing before we perform it. But if not, that price is going to stay where it is.
So you will break it down from all the different trades. You're saying, Maricela, I'm going to build your house for $1 million. How do you protect yourself? So how do you, sometimes a homeowner says, well, no, Nick, you said you were going to do electrical. No, Maricela, you said you're going to do electrical, but I wanted 20 LEDs. And
you good question. Very good question.
How do you protect yourself on that?
So what I do is I take the plans that they give me and I use that almost as like a holy grail, as a Bible. And yeah. Every line item that I write, whether it's electrical, demo, paint, or kitchen cabinets, it's always going to refer back to the plans saying, on your plans, you had 20 resource lights. That's what I'm going to put. If we move forward to the job now, you want 40 resource lights. I'm going to charge you for 20 resource lights more. Yeah. And whether it's foundation, framing, electrical, plumbing, everything goes back to that set of plans. And if they do want to do something that's not on the set of plans, I tell them from day one, give me everything that you want to do. Let me give you one bulk price for the entire project. And I'm going to write everything down. And if it's not on the plans, we're going to input it into the contract. If it is on the plans that you don't want to do it, we'll subtract it and we'll...
I think that's the smart part. I think that's the key, because a lot of people in that situation may not understand how to read plans, right? So if they've given their idea to somebody who drew the plans, the architects, whoever, that drew it all up, but they didn't, there was some miscommunication there, right? And so that then you get the plans and they think that you know exactly what they want, but it turns out that they were drawn incorrectly doing it. So I love that you're having that second conversation. You're not just saying, give me your plans, here's your price. You're saying, no. Give me your plans, now tell me what you want, and we'll cross-reference the two, make sure we're all on the same page, and then we'll come up with that price. And that's, I think that's the key.
That's the
key step in that whole process, right? Because without that, there's miscommunications that snowball into, you know, terrible events, you know, halfway through your project.
Excellent point.
But also one of the things, what architecturals don't give you though, those stamped drawings, those ready to issue drawings don't give you is the design elements, which the margins on those design are, calicutta marble is far different than, you know, quartz. So how are homeowners then to, and any time, most times, I would say 90% of times, homeowners don't understand the architectural engineer drawings are different than your design. Do you make sure then to protect yourself that those two things are sent over to you so that you're pricing everything out? Or how do you manage that?
So good points from Mike and good points from you. So let me tell you how I do that. Number one, when I sit down with a client, I make sure they understand. I don't expect them to understand every aspect of the project.
Yeah.
When it comes to design and when it comes to bedroom counts, bathroom counts, some sorts of the elements of the design, I do want them to understand. And the reason for that is because I don't want to build something that they don't want. There's a lot of times, like Mike said, you get a client who has a full set of plans and thinks that they know what they want. But then they actually, when they look at it and describe to them what this is, they're like, I have no idea what this is. I never wanted this. My architect just threw it in there.
Yeah.
So that's key number one, to make sure that there's going to be no issues moving forward. Key number two, when it comes to finished materials, flooring, cabinets, countertops, doors, windows, finished product, I always do my contracts in a way where I'm responsible for the entire labor of the project. So whether you give me tile that's $1 per square foot or you give me tile that's $10 per square foot, it's up to me to install it.
Okay.
Same thing with your appliances, same thing with your doors, windows, etc. When it comes to that actual finished material, I don't want to pick out the material for them. So it's whether it's a countertop, whether it's a backsplash, whether it's flooring, whether it's doors, whether it's windows, I'll help my clients and I'll tell them, listen, we'll usually get the best bang for the buck. I recommend you go to this specific vendor and talk to them and tell them exactly what you want. And they, because again, they're only a window manufacturer, they're only a door manufacturer, they're only cabinet manufacturer. Yeah. They can tell you based off of your budget, this is what you're able to afford and this is what you want as far as the design. So I have my clients go directly to my vendors, or I have my vendors go directly to my clients, and they will work together, come up with the quality that they want and at a price point where they want to be at. So at no point can a client come back and tell me, you picked this Samsung refrigerator. Now it's not working after 6 months. It's up to you to fix it. I thought, no, listen, I gave you the vendor. I gave you, you know how much your budget is for this specific fridge, and you picked this specific appliance to come to your home. So whether it's a warranty issue or whatever, you can see that from day one, I installed it properly as for working. Now you have a warranty issue or you have a malfunction, contact the manufacturer.
Have you ever done it different? Did you ever offer like design as a service for those homeowners that are just at that exploratory phase? Like what made you, because right now your contracts, and it makes a lot of sense now, like, so your contracts are you know, rough materials and labor, right? So I can give you, homeowner, a rough of costs. My costs, my contract costs are rough materials, right? And the labor to install whatever finishes you're going to provide. It's really hard to get a ballpark if you don't know the finish schedule, but your homeowners are selecting the finishes and they're going to run point on that. Did you ever do it differently, or has just this been one of the principles and one of the values of your business? Like, this is the way that it works the best for both parties.
Back in the day when I had salespeople and I had project managers and I had a partner, I did do it differently.
Okay.
Because not because I wanted to, but because they wanted to, because I wanted to have it
one-stop shop
as,
kind of thing.
As one-stop
full
shop
service.
That you
yeah.
do everything.
Service, yeah.
And what ended up happening is you give the homeowner an allowance. You know, you're allowed to spend $500 per door. You're allowed to spend $1,000 per cabin. You're allowed to spend $1,000 per slab. And
it's
just more work on my side than their side, because at the end of the day, somebody has to sit and do the number that say you spent X amount where it really
yes.
should have been this much. Now,
get,
you know, you're just playing accountant. So I explained that to my clients from day one. I don't want that unnecessary step or work for me as for you. And I'd rather you know from day one, this is exactly what's going to come towards me, Nick, the contractor, who's responsible for your rough materials and labor. And this is exactly how much you have for your finished materials. Now it's up to you. You can go spend $1 per square foot on tile, or you can go spend $10 per square foot on tile. You splurge where you want and you cut back where you want. And again, I'm there to help them pinpoint them to go towards the right vendor.
Yeah.
So number one, they get the service and the quality. And number two, they don't get screwed by just going to some random Joe in the on Google they found for windows or something else.
No, you're definitely right. That's more of a service, the whole design process and helping homeowners, you know, pick those finishes out and figure that's. You definitely need the support so that you can serve homeowners.
Yeah, not
in,
something you can be done on your own. Yeah.
And
I love that you've been disciplined enough to maintain that structure, right? Because it's so easy for somebody in your position to go, oh, well, I can upcharge that a little bit and I can make a little bit more money if I do that. And I can do that and say yes to a lot of things and try and control it all to make a little bit of extra money. But I mean, you're running yourself thin, right? So there's a level of discipline it takes to structure your deals those way, in your contracts that way, and maintain that structure throughout the process to maintain sanity, I would assume.
Yeah, and don't forget, I think you guys are giving me a little bit too much credit, because some of the homeowners you deal with, let me tell you why. Some of the clients you deal with actually have designers that they want to implement that design, because you're talking about, you know, a 5,000 square foot home that's got 5 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms. They want some sort of a design aspect. Someone who's going to sit there and babysit them and show them different aspects of this is the inset cabinet. This is a shaker cabinet. This is some sort of a natural stone. So they that's something that as a general contractor, whether you can give them or not, most homeowners don't want that from a general contractor. They want that from
a designer who's doing
design on a day-to-day basis.
Yep.
So I do have that help every once in a while. But every once in a while, you know, like last year, actually about a year and a half ago, we did a project in Sunset Plaza that was about 5,000 square feet. It was two guys, and they had very good ideas when it comes to design, but they had no designer. So it was always coming up with the design, like, on the spots, or, you know, 2 or 3 days beforehand, this kitchen cabinets are going to go in. They would come up with some sort of a design. Now you have the scramble. So we made it work, but I always like to prepare, you know, as they say, you know, measure twice and cut once. I like to measure 10 times and cut once, just to make sure that I don't get the wrong end of the deal myself, and I don't waste my time, and I don't waste my vendor's time.
What would you say in your experience, Nick, what's the best kind of client for you? Like, what's the kind of clients you love to work for? And then what are the type of clients where you're just like, I am not your guy?
The kind of client that is ideal for me is someone that respects you and that you give that respect back. Someone who is open to hearing ideas, even though they may not be the favorite, at least they're open to listening. Some people don't even want to listen. They just say, it's my way or the highway, and I know best. even though you're the general contractor, I know how to put this house together better than you.
Yeah.
And obviously, also being open to money, you know, because some people are very stricklers when it comes to it has to cost X amount. I'm not willing to spend that much more, especially now today after COVID, because of supply chain issues and because of pricing.
Inflation, like, and gas, and
people don't want to understand. You know, some people are just like, you know, I did my bathroom 10 years ago. It cost me $10,000. It should cost $10,000 today. And you tell them, listen, first of all, I'm not your guy because I'm not able to do it for $10,000. Number two, you're going to end up finding either a handyman or some general contractor that's new to the business and know how the business goes. You know, after a couple of paychecks that you collected, you're just going to run away and you're not going to be able to get in touch with it.
Yep.
So people hate hearing that. The unwise people don't want to hear that. But the wise people who actually end up listening to you will come and like kiss you because they're like, you, I've had clients now, it's happened to me multiple times, you know, on multiple deals where you tell them it costs X amount, they don't want to listen. You know, just, I think 3 years ago, I met with a homeowner who was a doctor, a very smart man. He was doing a hole in the hills. And I gave him, I think, a budget of, I think, like, let's use a round number of like $1 million. He's like, absolutely not. I can do this for $500,000. I told him, you know what?
Good here, luck, buddy.
Go for it.
I wish you the go. Best.
He's probably still in the renovation.
And, you know, and this was probably the worst thing that had happened to me. Why? Because the home in front of him, I built that home pretty much from scratch. So he saw my work. He saw the end result. And he talked to the homeowner. And this isn't a cheap neighborhood. This is a very expensive neighborhood in Mount Olympus. He saw exactly what I did on the day-to-day basis. I was there for a year and a half. And I gave them a beautiful home. So he saw from beginning to end. And when it came to his home, he's like, no, I don't want to spend $1 million. I'm going to do it for $500,000. So you know what? I wish you the best of luck. And I wish you nothing but blessings. So I think after like a year goes by, or a year and a half goes by, I get a call from him. He's like, you remember me? I told him, yeah, of course. You know, I built a house in front of you. He said, can you come by and look at my house now? And I told him, listen, last time me and you talked, you signed with the contractor. You were at the, you know, begin work. He's like, well, things didn't really turn out the way they were supposed to turn out. And now I'm in the middle of construction. I'm like, middle of construction? You're supposed to be done. So I kid you not, I wish I had a picture I will show it to you guys, but I literally walked into a home that was like hit by a bomb, and all that was left was a winter framing and nothing else after a year and a half. And I think, I don't want to lie, but I think she had spent at that point about $500,000 and yikes. Nothing was signed off for, nothing. Yikes. No electrical, no plumbing, nothing, no foundation, none of the electrical beams, nothing was signed off for. So he's like, let's continue. Let's work together now. I told him, what are you talking about? You know, like the home is like in ruins. It doesn't even match. The plans were nowhere close to, and you have any of this permitted? It's like, yeah, I have it permitted. I told him, so show me the inspection card. Now, of course, the inspection card is blank.
Blank.
His contractor had taken him for a ride, obviously.
Yeah.
So at that point, I gave him a price again to start. And again, talked to the architect, engineer, spent a lot of time on it. And again, he turned me down. And again, the second time around, he ended up doing another, going with another newer contractor out to think out of like Riverside. And again, he got screwed. And that's when I was just like, you know what? Some people you just can't help.
Some people you just can't help. And I think there's two messages there. One for contractors, for us in the industry is like, you know, those homeowners that just will never treat you like a partner and never appreciate the value that you bring. And this example that you've given us is one of those. Like, you wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt. You came back to the table, you offered your services, but there was no changing hand. And so for us in the industry, it's no, like, you knew that that person, this homeowner was not going to be a great client of yours. He was going to be somebody else. He should have been somebody else's client. And it's sticking to that, because I've done that so many times as well, Nick, where I've come back into the conversation, into the fold, because I want to be of service. And typically it never ends up in my favor, typically. And I think the second message to hear in that is for any buyers, homeowners out there who approach their GCs in this way. Well, you're going to do it for this much. And this is how, like, if you, for the homeowners out there that are coming into a relationship with their general contractor, naming their price, you're not setting yourself up for success. If you're dealing with a professional, somebody who is in this industry, you should trust the value that they bring. It just doesn't work that way. And it always ends up in the situation that homeowner had, where they just hire somebody because they named the right price. But that somebody for sure came in it knowing how they were going to mark up the project and get the $1 million that you had already initially quoted them and then some.
I couldn't have said it better than you. Let me just add to that a little bit. And I agree with you 100%. I think it's very hard. No, listen, it's very juicy. You know, you have a $1 million deal in front of you and you're waving it back and forth and back and forth. And you spend sometimes months and multiple, numerous hours back and forth and talking to the architect, engineer, your employees or subcontractors are trying to get a price and put it together and give them a complete package. But I think I've learned the hard way. I've learned with experience that, you know, once it's that relationship starts that way and they're demanding and telling you this is how it's going to be, you just have to learn and say, listen,
I am out.
Yeah, you just have to, you know, I'm a very nice guy and I have a very high tolerance. But I think what I tell the client coming in, they're like, listen, it's not going to be a good fit. You know, me and you just don't see eye to eye. Because, you know, you're expecting to do it for this amount or this time period. And it's just, I've been in the business longer than the next contract. And I can tell you that it's not going to happen. So with all due respect, you know, if you're not going to see eye to eye with me from day one and you think that you have a better option somewhere else, please go somewhere else. And, you know, I wish you nothing but success, but I just can't meet your needs.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it's about, right? The expectations. Yeah.
It's about the expectations. And Mike, you know, we've had these conversations over and over again, and this is a common trend that I'm picking up on, is like knowing when to say no, knowing when to bow out. And that's, you know, as a business owner, it can be hard to do because you're carving up your meat, right? Like you don't know when your next project is going to be. You just have to believe that word of mouth is working, or your SEO, whatever those things are. But knowing when to say no, thank you, is a really big business skill in our industry.
Completely agree. And it's very, very scary. You know, you need to pay your mortgage and you need to pay your employees and you need to pay your overhead.
Yeah.
And you don't know what that next project is going to come through. So it's extremely scary sometimes, but I've always known and learned that it's better to say no and have to deal with your bills and expenses rather than to get into a crappy relationship and a crappy project. And now, you know, the world's going to come to an end and you have to deal with lawsuits and et cetera. And it's just not worth it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, our industry is inundated with bad reputation of contractors. Like, just like, you know, mechanics, you know, everyone knows a bad contractor or everyone knows somebody who's had a bad contractor. And correct. I say that, of course, there are some rotten apples out there, but homeowners have just as much responsibility to the reason why there are bad apples in our industry, because they're going out there and they're hiring any guy to fit their budget that's unrealistic. You have to hire the value and the guy who has the good reputation, the things that are important. And for some reason in our industry, people feel like they could cut the corner. You don't cut a corner on a doctor. Like if you need a doctor, you go.
But you don't want to. You shouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't.
That's like I tell people all the time. Yeah, you don't want to go to the LASIK guy and it's giving you half off because it's got a billboard.
That's not the
guy. You don't want that guy sticking a laser in your eye that you got a coupon for, right?
I mean, Mike, you don't cut the corner on an Uber driver, right? If an Uber driver's like, hey, get in my car, I'll give you half up. I don't have a license. You don't get in the car. But yet there's something about the stigma in our industry where homeowners like, maybe I don't need Nick, the licensed contractor, and I can go hire the guy that's two counties out and he'll do just as good of a job. Well, homeowners also have some responsibility to the bad reputation of our industry. I think are changing.
I completely agree with you. And I'll tell you what I learned, I think, from the very early on. One of the mentors that I had when I first got into the business was like, what industry are you going to get into that within maybe one or two or three meetings, someone's going to sit down and willing to write a $500,000 check? You know, most industries are not that profitable.
Right.
So I think I agree with you. But I, as a contractor who's licensed and bonded and insured and the whole nine yards and does everything up to code, I place the blame on contractors, not the homeowner so much, because it's the contractors who are collecting the paychecks and running away and giving the rest of the good contractors a bad rep. So therefore, the homeowner thinks, I may get screwed with this even this license contract, so I might as well chicken out today and you know, protect myself. But I think with just like with any other industry, there's always good and bad. And I think what you have to do is find the clients that you can get along with, whether it's on the best of terms or on the worst of terms. I think if you have a good relationship and you can communicate with your client, you're always going to be able to come to some sort of agreement. It may not be best for them or best for you, but at least you'll be able to come to some sort of agreement, some sort of a middle, then you can, you know, proceed, whether it's, okay, let's stop the job and, you know, I give you this amount back or, you know, something. But, you know, it blows my mind that most contractors will come, collect a couple of checks and then run away. And then now they have to deal with their bad name or the bad rep or having a lawsuit after them. It's just.
Yeah. It's those contractors that couldn't say no. Where $500,000 that's a lot of money. But when you're renovating a whole house or you're building a whole house to ground up, that's not nearly enough. It's those contractors that couldn't say no that really damages our reputation for sure.
Yeah. Right. I want to circle back to when you were talking about your branding and your social media, because while we're talking, I'm pulling up your website and your Instagram and some other things, but it sounded like you obviously had the right mindset already. You've already figured it out in such that your website, your social media, you've even got a YouTube page. All those things are there to justify what you do. It's a digital resume, a business card, if you will, kind of background for people to do their homework on you when they either just hear about you or talking to you about doing a project. And I think that's the point. And you've been doing your first post on Instagram was back in 2013. Right. 9 years you've been on Instagram, right? From a contractor standpoint, you were probably one of the first, right? Yes. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that, but what was it? Where did that trigger turn on? Where did that switch turn on? Where did what flipped that switch to help you understand? Like, this is, I don't, because you've got zero call to action on any of those things, right? You don't post Instagram things that say, call me for building your house, or, you know, look what I can do and call me. And it's all just, here's who I am, here's what I do, you know, learn more about me. Where did that process start, and why did you go that route?
Let me tell you the honest truth. When I was in high school and college, I hated, I think, computers, and I hated technology. And I just could never wrap my head around why somebody had to sit on a computer and write out their essay. But as I got older and I understood time is money and, you know, everything needs to be organized and things need to go in a certain fashion, I ended up realizing that technology is only there to help you, not to bring you down. But from very early on, I understood that you have to move along with technology and you can't just stop it. Mm-hmm. Whether it's Instagram, whether it's social media, whether it's typing up your contracts in a Microsoft Word or PDF fashion so your client can see it and understand it. My philosophy has always been, you know, even on my contracts, I tell my clients, I want to write this up in a way where if I take this and throw it out my window and someone on the street picks up my contract, they're going to know exactly what's going to happen in this house, exactly who you are, exactly who I am, what's going to happen from the time we start to the time we finish, and where the progress payments are due, when, how long this project is going to take, etc. So I think when you're trying to lead that type of work life, people appreciate it. People see it and they are attracted to it, rather than someone who has a sloppy website or a sloppy social media. And, you know, you get in touch with them and they don't return the call for 2 or 3 days. You know, I've never believed in that. I always believed in, you know, client calls you or submits a request on your website. Within 24 hours, you should have some sort of communication with them, whether it's replying back to the email, whether it's email, talking to them, texting them, something that they know that, you know, listen, I contacted Nick at Advanced Builders and Contractors, and within 24 hours, he responded back. Not just, you know, whether it's you're going to engage with them or not. You know, some clients contact you and say, listen, just this morning, someone contacted me and tell me, I want to replace a glass in the front door. I told them, listen, it's on me, but please, it was from a management company. Keep my name and number. Next time you guys need to do an entire project, entire home, call me.
Yeah.
So smart. Yeah. And I would imagine, I mean, you're not, and maybe you are, but you're not getting inbound phone calls from your Instagram, right? I mean, that's more just there for
resume.
For people to go back and look and see the type of work you gotta do and kind of justify what you guys do and how you do it.
I think social media is more branding than advertising. I know people use it for advertising, but I believe it's just to get your brand name out there and for it to be a resume. So somebody who's interested in you looks you up on Google, Yelp, Angie's, or wherever, they can say, let me see if this company actually has a Facebook. Let me see if they have a YouTube channel. Let me see if they have an Instagram. Let me see what they've done in the past.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, they have a picture that is in my city or my block or my neighborhood that I can go back and refer to and say, yeah, I recognize this class that they did in my area.
Yeah. No, yeah.
I love that. Totally you've been on that since the very beginning too. And I commend you for that because that's a tough road for people to get or a tough hurdle for people to get over as far as like I'm spending time and effort and sometimes even money on these websites and social media pages. I should be seeing a return. But like you said, if you got to have the mindset that it's branding and it's
a long term
marketing.
I don't remember who this was. I think this was Henry Ford or I think the founder of Coke who said, don't ever stop advertising, whether it's in a good time or a bad time. Always put your brand out there, whether you know you're advertising on a baseball hat or you have vehicle stickers or well, you're doing some sort of promo or social media. Don't ever, ever, ever stop advertising.
Don't ever stop advertising. That's asterisk on that. Whatever that is, whether it's promoting your newsletter out, stopping and saying hello to your homeowner that you built their home 3 years ago, all of that is advertising. Or if you're doing, you know, $3,000 in SEO a month, whatever that it is, don't ever stop advertising.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Well, let's get into rapid fire. This has been awesome. This is the only scripted portion of the show that we have, but it's been awesome. And this is Maricela's contribution. Well, one of her many contributions.
It's the only reason why I'm here, Nick. It's the only reason why I'm here. So, you know, one of my big objectives for this podcast is so that it's a resource and the resources come out, not just in the stories that we exchange and the way that we relate, but also trying to pull from your experience. What are the things that you are using and that you're doing that work for you? So I just have four really simple questions. I really love podcasts that I walk away from being like, oh, I never thought about that. Or I want to check that out. Or that person's doing it and it's working for him. I'm going to do that too. So there are four easy questions. First question is, what is the number one resource that you cannot do your business without?
And give me an example. What resource? Not it.
So sometimes they can't do their business without QuickBooks. I love QuickBooks. I need to do my business without, I couldn't do it without QuickBooks Online. Others are like, I have a great CRM, a client relations management tool that I cannot do my business without. Is there a tool? What is a resource that you are using in your business? An estimating tool, something that you use consistently that business can function without it.
So my particular office runs off of Google. We use Google for everything. My CRM. My CRM.
Well, so I would imagine he means like the G Suite portion, right?
So
you have
Google
all
calendar,
your stuff connected, your mail, your calendar.
You're not a Microsoft Outlook guy. You're a Google guy.
Yeah. So everything that Google pretty much offers, we use, whether it's Google Meets, Gmail, Google Drive, or CRM is actually based off of a Google Sheets.
Yeah.
My
is
whole
Streak?
Business is
Do you use
based...
Streak?
Huh?
Do you use Streak? Google's, no. You need to look at, if you use Google and Gmail, look up Streak. It's an add-on to Gmail that will revolutionize your life.
Why? What is it?
So it connects to your email and then you set up what they call boxes, but in your case it would be clients, right? And then every single communication that comes through email is filed under that box, and then you can go click on that box and you can see in chronological order every email, and then it goes in and sucks out every file that's been sent back and forth. So you've got like an emails tab, you've got a files tab, and then it's got a section for all the all the contact information. You can write notes on each thing, and then you can sort them by date, or if you've got projects, put them in different categories as far as like, hey, these are the people I'm talking to, these are the people I'm actually working on. Their
what
projects
is it called? Google Streak?
Streak. 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 Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna look into that.
Streak. Do you use the Google calendars as well, Nick?
Yeah. We use calendar, Gmail, Drive.
Yeah.
Maps, satellite view, street view.
So
Google. It's that's good one.
So let's not. We need to call. We'll call that the G Suite. I think that's what
we'll call it. The G Suite. It's not the internet. It's G Suite.
Yeah,
correct.
The G Suite. Yeah, that's how they offer.
All right. Second question, Nick. What is the best advice someone has given you
in business?
What in business? Life and business. In life anything. And family.
I will tell you to believe in God and to never lose hope. And to always believe that everything is being done from God to you the best way possible. I think if you have that faith, whether it's in business, in family, life, I think if you have belief in God, you'll get much, much further and you'll enjoy the ride there rather than suffer through it.
Amen. Amen. This is a back-to-back podcast where we have faith. You got to believe in something bigger than yourself.
Yeah. Right.
Life is much bigger than
I think it helps you. Yeah. And I think it helps you kind of not sweat those small things, right? If that's your belief that things are being done, everybody's under plan, right? Like,
then you can
learn to kind of move on past some of these little things that shouldn't be blown out of proportion and focus on future and other things.
Right.
Life is much bigger than a 5,000 square foot ground up, right? Like, when you have a bigger source.
It's hard, right? It's hard to see not to see that when it's a $5 million home and it's the only thing you're doing right now. But
because it could very easily swallow you up. It could totally swallow you up. Nick, is there a book or a podcast that you love? A book or a podcast that you love?
One book that I remember that I actually gave my kids to read is Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Yeah.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I give to my kids to read because of what he says, which is in schools, whether you go to a private school or public school, they don't really teach you finance. They don't teach you accounting. They don't teach you anything. They just tell you, go get a job. You'll be fine and you're good to go. So I think it's very important for my kids to, number one, know what accounting is, what a checkbook is, what a CD is, and what financing is, and how to position yourself in life so that you're going to be there for success and you're not going to be doomed for failure.
Love that. I love that. I'll tell you, one of the biggest lessons that my parents gave me and instilled in me is that understanding of finances and how it works and what debt looks like and what good debt is and what bad debt is. Like, I knew that coming out of my house and into college. Like, so when all those in college, you know, on the quad, there's all those like, Citibank would show up and Wells Fargo, and you can get a credit card, you could spend whatever you want. And I was like, you're the devil. I recognize you because my mom and dad told me about you. All right. Last question, Nick. Is there a habit that you have that is all for you, that serves you, that helps you be a good father or a better business person, a good, you know, friend, if you have a partner? Like, is there one thing that you do just for yourself that just gives you life?
I think everyone needs a reset button, what I call a reset button, which means that everyone needs a little bit of time. It doesn't have to be 24 hours, but an hour or two, whether you want to sit there and smoke or you want to just zen out or you want to do yoga. Everyone, I think, needs something for them to be able to rebalance and get back to normal, and then they can tackle life again.
Is there something you do? Like, do you do yoga? Do you golf? Do you smoke a cigar? How do you reset?
I think I just zone out. You know, there's times where I call my wife and tell her, listen, it's 6 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm not going to come home. I had a horrific day. I've been taken through crap today. But I'm just going to sit in the office and chill out and, I don't know, maybe have a drink or have a smoke and zone out for 2 or 3 hours. And before I come home, because I just don't want to bring my negativity and my crap to my family. So I just want to do something to be able to reset myself and get grounded and then be able to tackle life again.
Yeah. Word up. Reset. Reset. All right.
I love the heads up too. Hey, what? I'm not coming home. It's gonna be a minute. It's better for you. It's better for me.
Listen, if I come home smelling of liquor and cigars, I wasn't anywhere else but in my office. Don't worry about me.
No, I have a pretty great relationship with my wife, and she always knows where I am. So.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Very cool. Well, Nick, this has been amazing. Awesome. I love what you're doing.
And hey, that was three questions. Right? That was the fourth question.
No, I gave you four questions.
Was that four? Yeah, that was four.
Best advice.
You just cut off in the middle of them.
The number one resource. You had a reset. You had a reset.
Okay.
You took a reset.
It wasn't me. I don't know. For some reason, the computer just decided to go blank.
It's all good. We're all money. Luckily, we've got a good editor. So he's got a little work to do, but we'll be all right.
But
this has been amazing. Before we go, we want to give you an opportunity to let people know where to find you, how to get a hold of you, see all the work you guys do.
So the best place to find us is online, abclosangeles.com, ABC like the beginning of the alphabet, Los Angeles spelled out, .com, or you can just call us at 888-930-1030.
Cool.
Wow, that's an easy number. I like that one. Perfect.
It was good to talk to you.
It's been awesome. Again. You guys have been awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the time, and stay safe out there.
Bless you. Thank you.
Bye, Nick.
All right, brother. How you
going? God bless. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you had a good time, be sure to hit that subscribe button to get all the latest episodes. And if you had a really good time, leave a review to let us know what you thought. Until then, go gather some crazy stories on your job sites, and we'll see you next time on So, You Wanna Be a Contractor.